and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We are presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. We have a momentous week in the NBA unfolding right now. We are recording this on Thursday afternoon. The NBA has just made a statement. I will read it to you. But, you know, by the time this podcast comes out, this more things will have happened, I'm sure. This is a statement from the NBA just released. NBA playoff games for today, which is Thursday, will not be played as scheduled. We are hopeful to resume games either Friday or Saturday. There's going to be a conference call with owners and players later today. Joining me from Los Angeles is, and who has reported on this extensively, is Ramona Shelburne. Hello, Ramona.
Hey, Bryce. Sorry, excuse me. None of us can talk anymore because we were up all night talking to everybody.
Right. Right. It's been a challenging few days. And joining us from the bubble in Orlando, the author of the recently released book, The Spencer Haywood Rule, Battles Basketball and the Making of an American Iconoclast, is Mark J. Spears of The Undefeated. I feel like, Spears, I feel like you may be able to write another book right on the heels of this one.
I'm too tired to write it right now.
I know the feeling. So this has been a fascinating period. There's a lot of emotions that have obviously poured through the players there where you are, Mark, poured through the media, including myself, poured through the fans, poured through public officials and politicians. It's all something that we're living and breathing in right now. Spears, you've reported on this extensively. I wonder if you could just take a step back and tell me about what your personal emotions were yesterday when you sort of put the pieces together about what was happening in the league right there in Orlando.
Yeah, I kind of got the sense yesterday morning when there was the teenage kid shooting up the people that things could turn into the wrong direction. And not the wrong direction, but a direction which there could be a stoppage. And I kind of could see in Pascal Siakam's eyes yesterday that he was in no position mentally to play, that he didn't want to play. And the Celtics and the, you know, Raptors were planning on having a second meeting to make that decision. So when I got word that there was going to be a second meeting, I immediately thought, okay, what are the Bucks going to do? And I just happened to bump into one of their players around lunchtime, and I'm like, okay, so are you guys considering not playing the game? He's like, news to me. we haven't spoke about that in the least. And the player wasn't telling me a lie. He was certainly telling me the truth. I mean, the Orlando Magic were very upset, I was told, because, you know, their Jeff Weltman, their president, had been reaching out to the Bucks and talking to their GM John Horst, trying to get updates on what the Bucks were going to do. So when the Bucks decided they were going to go to the game, they thought it was all a go. So they, you know, obviously in the end, the Bucks decided just minutes before the game, while the Magic were out there warming up, that they weren't going to play. And, you know, I kind of hear after the fact that the Magic felt that they could have handled it certainly a lot better and gave them a heads up, and it was kind of embarrassing. But, you know, I just felt like over the last couple of days, the emotions were getting tight after what happened in Kenosha and with the videos and with the, you know, the protests and everything. There just seemed to be a mood change starting from Monday that just got to a boiling point yesterday.
Ramona, you and I both spent all night last night talking to people there in the bubble. I think you have a pretty good feel for what their emotions were, even though they were kind of scattershot. They were kind of all over the place. But I know you were talking to some people.
I'm going to echo a little of what Mark said, which was simply, you know, the Bucks decided fairly unilaterally and very quickly to not play the game. And it reminded me a little of how the season shut down on March 11th when, you know, we had all seen this coming, like little signs here, right? You knew the Warriors, talk about playing without fans, like the drumbeat had started, that the coronavirus is going to be a serious thing, but you know, the you just felt it building, and then all of a sudden it went from building to boom. And I think that's what happened yesterday, Mark. I'll even take this back to Masai Ujiri when the video came out of the incident involving the Raptors president and general manager after the finals last year. And it showed the officer, you know, who had sued Ujiri for pushing him or something. It showed the complete opposite, that the officer had instigated it and pushed Masai. People were upset about that. Then they were upset about Jacob Blake. And I mean, when I saw the LeBron James on Monday night after the Lakers won that playoff game, and you could just see LeBron was just all over the place. Like, man, he goes, my emotions are all over the place. Like,
they played an absolutely brilliant game.
Yeah, a brilliant game. And he says, I can't even enjoy this win right now because I'm so upset. And he goes, you know, and I just keep thinking about this, Brian and Mark. It's just, these are some of the most powerful black men in the world. And they went into this season saying, I need to stop seeing black people get killed by police. And we're going to dedicate our season to that. And we're going to do everything we can to raise awareness and make sure that doesn't happen anymore. And how is it this keeps happening? Like, how can we be some of the most powerful black men in the world and not be able to stop this and not be able to change this? And I think that this building, since the video with Masai Ujiri was released, since LeBron's press conference Monday night, since Doc Rivers almost broke down in tears Tuesday night after their game, I mean, you could just feel it building. And as much as what the Bucks ended up doing surprised everyone, like it caught them on their heels, as you said, Mark, like they were at lunch and they were playing. And I mean, there were players warming up on the court. You know, Mike Budenholzer did his pregame press.
Yeah, I mean, there were guys in their uniforms. You know, Giannis went through his warm up. I've gone through a bit of an arc on this because when it first happened, and the more I learned about it, I mean, I really thought that the Bucks were being a little bit. I thought they maybe acted before totally thinking it through, because you know, as Mark mentioned, the other teams weren't involved, you know, the players or the league wasn't involved, and it hit everybody. And I kept saying, you know, like, well, what is their what is their goal here? What are they hoping to do? And I was wondering, you know, what is the off ramp? I must have said that word 10 times to people yesterday. What's the off ramp? And then I came to understand, the more I talked and the more I listened, I came to understand that it was part of an exasperation, and they didn't think that they didn't not play because they thought everything was going to be fixed, or that they thought they could get the Wisconsin state legislature to pass a bill, which is something that they ended up working on in that locker room. But because they were exasperated, I thought Clinton Yates from The Undefeated, he wrote very eloquently, and I learned from reading Clinton, and he called what's going on right now a collective bereavement, that the players are reacting to the weight of everything. And, you know, you can term it a bunch of different ways. You can term it a boycott. You can term it a strike, a walkout. But I like, and I can connect with him saying collective bereavement, and the fact that they want to potentially take today and tomorrow as well. And I have to say, Mark, there's been a lot of positives that have come out of this bubble. There's the awareness has really worked. I mean, I as somebody who would like to think that I'm well-rounded, have learned. I've you know, the piece that you wrote, for example, on why Mike Conley was wearing "I am a man" on the back of his jersey, in reference to the sanitation workers' strike in Memphis in 1968, the event that Martin Luther King went to Memphis for when he was assassinated. I learned doing that. And this last 24 hours, when there wasn't basketball, when I was planning to work, I learned. I watched speeches that James Baldwin made. I, you know, talked to people who went through this in the 60s. And I talked to one woman who I wish I could use her name because she's famous, but I don't want to say who, and she's in her 70s. And she just said to me that, you know, in the 60s and 70s, we didn't have a plan when we protested. It was born out of emotion and rage. You know, it was Muhammad Ali and everyone else who eventually used that to make a change. And so, Spears, the players may feel like they're helpless, but I feel like something is being accomplished here, just in my own personal experience. And I'm not trying to say it to try to make any point. I'm just saying that's what has gone through. I don't know if it's going to work. I know that this isn't clean. They're not getting probably a clean result immediately out of this, but I do think what they're doing is going to do something.
Yeah. I think what's hard, Brian, is we're so insulated here, man. Like this really feels like a true bubble. In a lot of ways, people on the outside got to remind me what's going on. Like there's fires going on where I'm from in Northern California, but I'm not, you know, quite familiar with everything. I had people say, "Hey, man, you check on your mom? You check on your parents out in New Orleans? You know, there's a storm coming." And so I had to like shake myself and wake myself up and get out of this basketball world and check on my family and get abreast with what's going on. And I guess you could say my two homes, Louisiana and the Bay Area. And so not only do you lose sight on what's going on outside of the bubble in a lot of ways, although what happened in Kenosha certainly had an exclamation point to it. I think they just don't know like how they're affecting the world, how the world is perceiving everything that they're saying, taking it in, being influenced, energized, educated. They don't know. Like, how do they find that out? So I think when their families come on Monday, because you got about 100 people quarantining, not everybody's going to be able to make it in because their loved one's going to get eliminated. But I think maybe they'll get to learn from them, man, so-and-so called me and told me what you said, or this person said, you know, that I read this, and just like, you know, the fact that you just told me about the Mike Conley story, that means a lot to me. Because I don't know, like, I haven't got a sense who's reading me, you know what I mean, or who that influence is. And I think what these guys are doing that is not fair to themselves is putting the weight of the world on them. They're not going to change evil. You know, they could do a great job of knocking down some of its bricks, changing some mentalities, educating people, but evil doesn't get conquered in 3.5 months, you know? And so hopefully over these next 2 days, when I assume they start playing again on Saturday, they could take a deep breath, which they probably needed. They could get back to playing. And then when they see their loved ones, because I do think, Brian, on Monday or on Sunday, when you see the video of a black man getting shot at while he's walking to his car, at his car, and his three kids are in the back seat, that has an influence on every father that's in this place, especially if you haven't seen your child in a while. I talked to Fred Van Vliet, and his father was murdered when he was 5. Okay. And he had to deal with being talked to about it at 5 years old. Then his kids are not here. They're coming on Monday, but you see that incident and it brings you back to your childhood. And then it also brings you to your current fatherhood, how you haven't seen your kids in a month and a half or nearly 2 months. And I think it made him and everybody else in here start to get really, really emotional, intense, because you can't go hug your child. You can't explain it to your child. I have a family member who said they had to talk to their son, who's not even 10 yet, because he hates white people now. Like, because he's seeing all these, and then that's what people got to understand. Like, the kids are seeing images much more than when we were growing up. We didn't have YouTube. We didn't have our phones. cell phones. We didn't have all these different means to see things. We weren't interested when I was a kid in watching the 11 o'clock news or the 6 o'clock news. You know, I wanted to watch cartoons. But now these kids are seeing all these images. And for a young black kid seeing this over and over, it like reminds me when I was a child in my, you know, 10, 11, 12, being at the Afro-American Center in San Jose, watching Eyes on the Prize and seeing people getting, black people getting hit with water hoses and bit by dogs and not being able to go into this restaurant and black and white bathrooms or water fountains and stuff like that. Like, that had a profound, painful effect on me. And for the first time in a while, I feel like that pain I saw when I was a kid, now these kids worldwide are seeing it and are going to have long-term effect on it too, from it too.
So Mark, one of the things I think, and Ramona, one of the things I think is happening, I can't say for sure, I don't know, is that what's happened here is that because these players have made it such a mission for them to use the platform in Orlando as a leveraging point to open this discussion, that when something like what happened in Kenosha happens, there's an immense pressure, even if it's not their community specifically saying, what are you going to do? They feel the pressure. And so in addition to impacting them the way you just spoke about how Fred Van Vliet was feeling, it almost like perpetuates, because they've been so willing to put their feelings out there and to make this such a part of a basketball experience. When this happens, it's like, well, what are you going to do? And I can just tell you that this kind of happened with LeBron James. We all know what happened when he and the Heat made that huge statement about Trayvon Martin. And again, the awareness here, I tell people this whenever this comes up, I did not know who Trayvon Martin was or what happened with him when that photo went up. I was with the Miami Heat in Detroit when it happened, and I did not know what they were talking about. And so, but he had done that, and then he had done several other things where he had commented on what had been terrible moments in this struggle. On Eric Garner, where he wore the I Can't Breathe shirt in Brooklyn. He had made comments about other things. So when the Tamir Rice tragedy happened in Cleveland, LeBron was back playing for the Cavs. And because he had commented and taken action and demonstrated on all of those previous events, there was an expectation for him to do something about what had happened to Tamir Rice. There was a call from people for him to boycott playing for the Cavs until there was action done with the officer involved. And he was all of a sudden felt like he was in water up to his eyeballs. And LeBron has learned from that, because that was a difficult situation for him. And now he has channels where he can focus his energy, such as his school, such as More Than the Vote. And so Ramona, I think that part of the thing that's happening, in addition to them feeling the pressure of being in this bubble, like Mark just articulated, they feel a social pressure to answer and be the voice of their community, because it's almost like self-perpetuating. And I'm afraid that that pressure is only going to grow when, unfortunately, we can expect more things like this to happen.
Mark, something you said just, you know, hit me. They feel like they have the weight of the world on their shoulders, like it's on them to fix this. And I get that, because they are some of the most powerful black men on the planet. Okay? I mean, there's white players too, yes. But LeBron James is probably top five in terms of power and influence in this world. And he, you know, when he puts his mind and the weight of his power and brand behind something, it can move mountains. And it just got to be so frustrating to constantly feel like you're building a school, so you're working on, you know, education. You did More Than a Vote, which has been a 6-month endeavor. This isn't just something that popped up. This is a large, coordinated, nationwide campaign that LeBron has been heavily engaged in. Like, he's doing things all the time, and then you wake up and see that video. And it's like, you're doing things, you're working hard. And I know, you know, some, I spoke to the Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin yesterday, and he, you know, he was, his name is Mandela Barnes, a great name, right? And he was saying, the players in the call, they all just kept asking him, give us some things we can ask for, give us some things that can, that we can work towards. And one of the questions they followed up with was, hey, what has changed in our state in the last 3 months? Has anything changed? Has there anything been done since these protests started? I mean, you know, all the awareness, all the conversations, all the protests, everybody talking about this, but what has actually been done? And, you know, the Lieutenant Governor basically told them, like, well, it's really hard to get things done. There's a, you know, the state legislature is, you know, the Mandela Barnes and Governor Tony Evers there are Democrats. They put a legislative package on the table 2 months ago for police reform. There's like 9 bills within it. There's all sorts of different police reforms that they've been trying to get the legislature to vote on, but the legislature is controlled by the opposing party, the Republican Party in that state. And even when Tony Evers, the governor, calls a special session, the legislature has shown up and gaveled in and gaveled out without taking a vote. They're not required to even vote on it. And the Bucks are like learning about this on the fly. I mean, one of the details Malik Andrews told me from just standing outside that locker room yesterday was about an hour into the meeting, a video coordinator for the Bucks went out into the hallway and grabbed the whiteboard and wheeled it back into the room. And it was like they were literally taking notes on their call with the Lieutenant Governor and the Attorney General and coming up with plans and coming up with things that they could go try to work on. And, like, you know, I think these guys in the NBA, they want to help so much. They want things to change. The owners I've heard from, at least I've talked to, have said, we want to help them help the world, that we want to help them do this, but what more can we do? Because in the end, making change in this world is a long, complicated process. And I think, you know, Mark, you were one of the people who told me about this. I also heard from some other folks who were in the room that Andre Iguodala, the vice president of the Players Association, spoke pretty eloquently about this and saying to the guys, you know, you have to have strategic coordinated action and political action outside of this. It's not just about speaking up and raising our voices. It's about voter registration. How many of you guys are even registered? How many of your team? Do you know that there's a landmark police reform bill on the table in California this week? Do you know about it? It's called California Bill 731. And Andre knew all about it. And he had educated himself and he was pushing for these things. And I think that's the level of activism that they probably need if they truly are going to have the kind of...
I don't know if every player is going to be like Andre Iguodala, but I mean, I think it's fair to say that not everybody in that Milwaukee locker room had a plan. And that, you know, caused some problems, but their intentions were pure. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Spears, I just want to ask you, what do you think is going to have to happen now? The players are going to go back to playing after what looks like going to take 3 days to sort of get their minds a little bit more put together. you know, one of the things that I heard from some people that were in the bubble yesterday was that there's a little bit of frustration that Adam Silver and actually none of his Mark Tatum and Adam Silver are not in the bubble. Kiki Vandeweghe and Byron Spruell, you know, two high-ranking NBA officials are there, but not the commissioner or the deputy commissioner. You know, if Adam had been there, he, you know, could have, in theory, gone into the locker room to talk to the Bucks. I mean, maybe they wouldn't have invited him, but he certainly could have been at the meeting last night. You know, Michelle Roberts, the head of the Players Association, is in the bubble. And do you think that in addition to the families coming in, that, and I'm not saying that this is Adam Silver's fault per se, but I think the league may need to be a little bit more on top of this to help the players through this.
Yeah, I think there was, and I think all of us have high respect for Adam Silver and what he's done. But I do think there was perhaps a little misstep here, not being in the bubble. I think for the players, it would have meant a lot if Adam was here, or Mark Tatum was here, maybe even some of the like owners were here. Seeing what they're going through, seeing, you know, what they're giving up, how hard it is, what it's like to
and
be.
Just so you know, you mean in the bubble? There's owners who have come to the second layer, but you know, but they fly in.
That's
they get, you know, they're at the games, but they're behind the plexiglass. Sorry,
yeah, they can come and go as they please, but they can't come down to the court and visit with their guys and hear what they're going through and kind of be a sounding board for them. And also hear what they need. So, I mean, like that, I think perhaps a lot of things could have been alleviated if those parties were here. And I think every, not only just Adam and Tatum should be here, I think the owners should do this too. And it might be beneath them to quarantine for 7 days. I mean, I'm Steve Ballmer. I'm worth $3 billion. I don't do that.
You know He's what worth I mean? About like, $70 billion, but yeah, yeah.
My bad. Yeah. There's different levels for sure. Like it can't be beneath you to do that. I think if one of the owners does do that, that'll mean a tremendous amount to their guys.
Well, some of these owners are running big corporations and big businesses. They have responsibility to other employees.
No, guys, I've heard that too, and I thought about it. You know, about because Brian and I are not in the bubble, right? And we both made personal choices. You know, we have young kids. My son is almost 2. Brian, your son is almost 3, right?
That's right.
And it was a long commitment to be away, right? Like, you know, at least on my end, I felt like, you know, with COVID and my parents being elderly, I mean, they're not, I don't think of them as elderly, but they're over 70, okay? So I guess they are. And them taking a pretty big role in childcare, I didn't feel like I could leave for that many months, right? I know, Brian, you probably had a lot of same considerations. Yeah. And it's something like truly, like it was a no-brainer for me, but it's also made me appreciate the sacrifices these players and coaches have had to make because a lot of them have young kids too. Yeah. You know, a lot of them have the same kind of issues that I had.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Silver has a 2-month-old.
Yeah.
But so does Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, and right. I think that's what we're talking about, right? You know, like
yeah, a bunch of these guys have left newborns.
Newborns. Dennis Schroeder. I mean, it's when you appreciate that sacrifice. Like, there's a part of me that I always want to acknowledge that. Like, you know, I don't feel embarrassed about my choice. I don't feel bad about it. I chose to be around my family because I felt like I needed to be here, and it was too much of a risk for my. For my parents and also for my son, but I think those guys had the same feeling. And you gotta respect that, you know.
Did you guys see the look on Dame Lillard's face when he left today and got to hug his boy?
Yeah,
like that picture was priceless. I've been around him a lot here. I haven't seen him smile like that the whole time that we've been here. And even for like the media here, like the players, and I know people don't care about us, but. They have these more palatial hotels, pools, things that they could do, whereas you know we don't have a restaurant to go to, you know, or as many activities to do. We kind of just sit by the pool and play music and drink our own BYOB or W for me with the wine.
I've heard that you are a wine. I heard that there's been some wine brought in by you, Mr. Spears, just for the record.
I am, you know, I will take the.
You've earned it.
Yeah, I mean, I got a wine fridge in my room, so that probably says everything you need to know, right? Like, I actually bought a wine refrigerator to put here. So well, you know, that's a, you know.
You're only indulging.
I will say this, Brian, and you'll appreciate it with the Nebraska roots and everything. I also have to do things mentally to keep myself sane. And so I'm going fishing every week. I've never really went fishing. And we could go fishing. Like, I'm not a golfer. They offer golfing and stuff like that. So every Sunday for the like past month, I've gone fishing. And it's been an amazing 2 hours that takes me like kind of out of the bubble in a secure way. And I come back and I feel just re-energized, so much better, got away, and then back to reality. But I think, you know, guys are, you know, yearning to do more of that, just something that makes you feel like you're not stuck. And I do think come Monday, when friends, family, whoever comes in, yeah, it's going to be high maintenance, you know, all of a sudden have to entertain folks and everything. But having your kids, having your wife, having your girlfriend, or your homeboy, whoever here, your father, your mom, oh, man, I'm going to be jealous of them, you know. But I think in terms of the players, they'll be a lot more relaxed the rest of the way come Monday.
All right. Well, Spears, you've got to go. I appreciate your time. Appreciate what you're doing. Overall, your coverage, but also the coverage of the undefeated right now. I mean, look, they're in our family. They're, you know, Mark is my coworker, but go read the undefeated, and it will help educate you. In addition to telling you what's going on in there, will educate you. So I would encourage everybody to do that. I certainly have been reading the undefeated as a consumer, not just as a ESPN employee. I'm going to stick with Ramona for a minute, but thank you, Mark. I appreciate your time. Hang in there, man.
Hey, and I'm going to tell you both of you guys too, you know, there ain't no reason for you to feel guilty. I'm happy that you're getting those time with your babies, man. Cause that's like when I see Cassidy looking at her kid and, you know, some of the people looking at their kids and stuff, you can't get that time back. So don't feel guilty about that. Enjoy every second with your babies.
All right, Spears. Take care, man.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, Ramon, I just wanted to ask you mentioned a minute ago about wondering what there was for them to do. By the time this podcast comes out, there may be an announcement because the players are meeting with the owners over the, you know, Zoom or something this afternoon. The owners have pledged $300 million over the next 10 years to initiatives to increase Black entrepreneurship in all of the NBA cities and other social justice initiatives. You know, some of them have gone much further. Joseph Tsai earlier this week, the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, donated $50 million to social justice initiatives. So it's from a money standpoint, you know, significant outlay has been made. But I think I got a feeling that the NBA players want more because they think there's more to give than just writing a check, even though the check writing is significant. What sort of, because I know that you talk with owners and so do I, you know, how do they, you know, what is the path forward from here with the players and owners, knowing that they also in October have to then renegotiate their collective bargaining agreement to get ready for next year? And I don't mean to even imply that we need to worry about, you know, the mid-level exception, but also it's responsible. One of the things that happened in the owner and the players meeting last night was that they talked about the negotiation that's upcoming and that needs to be, that the players, as they consider their options here, need to be mindful of that. So what do you think the owners and the players can do that will help move this all forward?
Well, I think that's the big question. And everyone I was, everyone at ownership level I was talking to last night were like, you know, we have been supportive. We've tried to, you know, put our money where our mouth is. We've issued statements. You know, the Bucks owners literally, when the players decided not to play, they said, who do you want to talk to? We'll get them on the phone. And they can move mountains. As you know, the Bucks ownership is some of the most well-connected political ownership and owners in the country. I mean, they literally just staged the Democratic National Convention virtually last week. So when they wanted to get the governor and lieutenant governor and attorney general of Wisconsin on the phone, that happened quick. And that shows you that there are owners out there that have the power to move mountains. They have the power to open doors. And I think the players feel like they can do more for them in those initiatives, in helping them enact the types of societal change, but also legislative change, where it's not just throwing money at a problem, where it's not just issuing statements of support, or, you know, a paid holiday on Juneteenth. I think they want them to help them engage legislatively. I think they want them to help open those type of doors, or even to become more political and in the actions that they are taking. I don't know what ideas they can come up with that they haven't already tried.
This is a real tough one because owners, some of them will just do whatever they like. Mark Cuban has no concern about what anybody thinks about him, but many of the owners work in businesses that are, you know, public facing, or some of them do. And like some of them actively work to stay behind the scenes. Like you don't see Stan Kroenke, Nuggets owner, while someone's the LA Rams out there giving interviews. You know, you don't see Clay Bennett, who's become a very powerful NBA owner. He hasn't given an interview that I'm aware of in years. Even though his team has taken steps in his name. You know, some of these guys specifically keep a low profile. The ones who are out there are usually, they try to be apolitical. You know, there's, you know, Tillman Fertitta is on CNBC almost every day. Mark Lazary, who owns the Bucks, is one of the biggest Democratic fundraisers in the country, and just was, you know, was trying to host the DNC this year. You know, he is an outlier. You know, so, I understand the players feeling. I totally do. And I totally understand the players feel like the owners can do more. I think it's a challenge. And I think this is where Adam Silver comes into play, how to find the bridge to build.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I had a line in the story, which was, you know, we wrote today, which was simply, this was the height of player empowerment. In other words, they stopped the league. And four other major sports also postponed. Because
tennis halted.
Yeah,
baseball halted.
Soccer.
I mean, soccer, and then the NHL has canceled their games for tonight.
So they literally stopped sports in their tracks. Everybody,
the Bucks
did it.
The Bucks.
That ripple effect from the Bucks stopping, not playing yesterday, stopped five major sports. That's incredible amount of player empowerment, but it also showed the limits of the players' power, because while they may have a tremendous amount of power within the sports world, within the cultural zeitgeist, within on social media, or you know, in circles with advertisers or big Fortune 500 companies or broadcast networks, they can't get a bill passed through the Wisconsin state legislature on their own. I don't know that the speaker of the Republican assembly in Wisconsin cares. I don't know about that. You know, I don't know if they have they can exert political pressure on elected officials across the country in ways that they can within the world of sports. And so in one way is it is very empowering what happened in the NBA yesterday. In another way, it's also very humbling, because it reminds you that change happens really slowly. It takes a lot of hard work, a lot of effort over a long time. You know, to get a bill passed anywhere, let alone through Congress, let alone on the national scale. And so I think that's where we ended up. I think that's where all the players ended up. And they, you know, what I had heard about this morning's meeting was, it was less of a discussion amongst everyone. Like, I think last night's meeting, you know, it was an open floor. Everybody talked. This morning was more union leadership was much more organized. It was much more, let's focus on the big picture of, do we want to keep playing? If so, you know, do we have more power with our platform here in Orlando to continue to speak about this and bring attention to these causes and situations? Or will we have more power leaving the bubble and going back to our daily lives? And I think, you know, somebody had made a point. I don't want to name this person because I don't know 100% if who this player. But the point was, there have been plenty of people who've left the bubble. There were other people who decided not to play for social justice reasons, and we haven't heard much from them. You know, like, what have we heard from people who are not in Orlando right now? Like, they're not having the same impact as what the players in Orlando are having right now. And I think that hit home. One of the comments I know Jaylen Brown said was, if we're going to shut this all down and go home, are you going home to just hang out with your family and be home? Or are you going home to get out on the front line? And I think that's where they all ended up last night. I know that was the theme of this morning, and Brian brought this up too, and I think it's very real. They also considered the pretty cataclysmic effects on the financials for next year if they just shut the league down and just, you know, weren't necessarily willing to go that far right now because, it could cost, you know, the number I heard that thrown out by the union last night was 25-30% reduction in player salaries if they don't have the playoffs for the rest of this year. And that's in addition to what they were already looking at for the pandemic and not having fans. It's pretty staggering.
Yeah, although I don't think they're being that, I don't think money is motivating them at this point. I mean, but I just think they were exasperated. And yeah. So they did it because it felt was what they had to do. I do think that it helped because it changed the conversation and moved the conversation. My concern and my fear for the country, really, but that's neither here nor there. But my concern is I'm afraid that this is going to happen again. Something else is going to happen. And it because the players have taken this position, even though I respect it and it has helped me and taught me and I've learned from it, I'm worried about the precedent they're setting because whether it's, hopefully it doesn't happen for a long time, but you know, it does keep happening. And so I'm just, and I guess their response would be, well, we're trying to make sure that doesn't happen. So the conversation will continue going. We'll continue watching it, and there'll be basketball, it looks like, soon. And that's good, but it's also good that there's going to be a break. The collective bereavement. I really thought that crystallized it. Thank you to Ramona. Thank you to Mark Spears. Before we go, a reminder that ESPN offers a bunch of great basketball podcasts like the Woj Pod, where in the latest episode, Woj and Malika Andrews relive one of the most unforgettable days in NBA history, which was yesterday. They're both in the bubble like Mark Spears. You can find the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts. That's it for today's show. We'll talk to you next.